Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Join your host, Sandra Flack.
Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. That is Colossians 3:12. This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and joining us for part two of our conversation from California is former foster youth, Karen Christensen. Welcome back, Karen.
Good morning, Sandra. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you back on your show, this show. And last week, you candidly shared the story of your painful childhood growing up in and out of foster care and the very heartbreaking way you had to leave your last foster family. Mm-hmm. If our listeners today did not hear part one of Karen's story, I urge you to do so, because from those events and the healing that you experienced over the years, Karen, you've learned so much. But last week, you narrowed it down to two things specifically on your heart, and that is identity and trust. And that's what we're going to discuss today. So let's begin with identity. What have you learned about your identity and the importance of knowing our identity?
Well, one thing I've learned is that neither my circumstances or my behaviors determine my identity. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. Neither my circumstances or my behaviors determine my identity. So what's happened in my past, who I was born to, where I'm from, things I've experienced, they don't have any bearing on my future, and including who I am or what I become. And in the positive, it works the same way. What I do isn't actually who I am. It's easy to say I'm a music teacher. Well, no, I teach music. It's not, even though it's so much a part of my life, it's not actually who I am. And it's easy to get trapped into believing the lie that the labels we may have been given growing up are who we really are as individuals. But if we're ever going to understand our true identity and how God views us, it's really important to look at that lie and unpack it. So first of all, there's a significant difference between a name and a label. And although both are used to identify something or someone, a name is who a person is. It's their very being or soul. And that's why we're sensitive to the tone of voice when somebody uses our name. You know how, like, when a parent uses all three of your names, you know you're in trouble. But a label is information attached to something or someone. In the case of a person, labels are usually based on our behaviors, and the two are easily mixed up. So a really simplistic example is a loaf of bread. If I say Wonder Bread or Sara Lee, I'm talking about the label associated with or wrapped around the bread, but Wonder and Sara Lee aren't the actual product. The name of the product is bread. And I believe God places great importance in names, not labels. In Psalms, it says He, the Lord, counts the number of stars and calls them by name. I mean, think about that for a minute. He not only numbered them. When I look up into the heavens, I mean, it's overwhelming. He gave each one of the stars that we see, and the ones we obviously don't see, a name. That just blows my mind, and it shows me that He thinks that's important to name them. In the Bible, a name represented who the person was. In fact, did you know that when a person was sold into slavery, their name was changed?
Mm.
That's because the slave owner wanted to strip the person of their former identity. One example I can think of is when King Nebuchadnezzar renamed Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I did a name study once and learned that each of their birth names had a form of God in their spelling, either A-H or E-L. And their names meant Yahweh is gracious, who is what God is, and God has helped. And in a way, that's what the enemy tries to do with us. He wants to strip us of our identity. He quote-unquote renames us and calls us by a label or our behavior. So loser, stupid, lazy, those are labels. And those are the outward things. And God is so intentional in telling us in 1 Samuel 16:7 that it's man in our enemy that looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. Mm. He looks at the inward man, and he calls us by our name, never our behavior. In John 10, Jesus tells us that he's the shepherd, we're his sheep, and he calls me by name. My natural parents named me Karen Elizabeth. Karen means pure. Elizabeth means oath or promise of God. And considering all that I've been through, I like to think God had a hand in that, because my parents certainly didn't know the Lord. Mm. I can't ever talk about the subject of identity without thinking of the movie Blood Diamond. There's such a powerful scene in it that really moved me to tears when I saw it and helped me to understand my own identity through God's eyes. One of the main characters is Solomon Vandy, a father whose son, Dia, has been kidnapped by enemy rebels. And over many months, Dia is traumatized by witnessing horrific murders, and he's brainwashed to participate in the genocide of anyone who's not a part of that rebel movement. Solomon looks tirelessly for his son, but he can't find him. Then one day, deep in the African jungle, Solomon is confronted by Dia, who's pointing a gun at his father and ready to kill him. Mm. Solomon slowly approaches his son and says this, "Dia, what are you doing? Look at me. What are you doing? You are Dia Vandy of the Prau Mendi tribe. You are a good boy. You love soccer and school. Your mother loves you so much. She waits by the fire making plantains and red palm stew with your sister Netta. The cows wait for you. And Baku, the wild dog, who minds no one but you. I know they made you do bad things, but you are not a bad boy. I am your father who loves you. And you will come home with me and be my son again." Solomon called him out and reminded his son who he was and who he was loved by. And as Christ followers, God does the same thing for us by telling us over and over in his word that we are loved by him and we are who he says we are, which is beloved, child of God, redeemed, adopted, a new creature, blessed, chosen, holy, and so on. These names are our true identity. The world will always try to label us, but our true identity is found in Christ.
Mm, amen to that. Our identity is in Christ. No matter who we are or where we've come from, we are fearfully and wonderfully made.
Wonderfully made.
Yeah. Chosen, loved, adopted, God's masterpiece. It's all in the word. We need to believe what God the Father says about us and not believe the lies of the enemy, like you mentioned. And Karen, let's talk about trust, which was the other huge part of what you have learned through your experiences. And I know as an adoptive mom, that lack of trust comes from trauma. So you experienced childhood trauma. Tell us what you've learned about trust.
A lot. I've learned that as trust goes, so goes the relationship.
Mm.
In other words, if trust is broken, the relationship is broken. And for a traumatized child, like you just said, that means they will only learn to trust in the process when they feel safe. And that takes time. It takes time for a child to learn to trust. That's why, just like with any family, it's really important for parents of foster and adopted children to help them identify safe people. They've most likely already experienced an unsafe person's action, so it's super important to spell out what a safe person looks like. A safe person will care about you. A safe person won't hurt you. A safe person won't tell you to keep secrets. A safe person won't touch you in ways that scare you or make you feel uncomfortable, etc. But I think it's more complicated with God. And no matter what kind of home we grew up in, I believe we all have seasons in our lives when we struggle to trust God, where our faith is shaken, because as humans, we tend to see negative or hard events as a betrayal. I know I certainly did when I came out of my last foster home. I felt completely betrayed by God. And when we're in that hard season, we begin to question God. Where was he when I was suffering? Why did he allow or even cause these things to happen? Why didn't he intervene? The goodness of God can be really hard to understand when compared to real life experiences. For me, there are three important things that I believe are key components in maintaining trust when bad things happen. Number one, taking God out of the equation doesn't change my circumstances. If I walk away from God, it's not going to change anything. I can try to numb the pain, but at the end of the day, I'll still be in a hard place. So I'd rather be in a hard place with God by my side than in a hard place without God.
Good point.
Yeah. Number two, the goodness and faithfulness of God only comes into question when bad things happen. So in the hard seasons, it helps to recount all of the ways God has been good to us. In a way, we can look at, in this way, we can look at the history of his trustworthiness. I liken it to a chair. I didn't inspect the chair I'm sitting in before I sat down. Why not? Because it's always held me up. And even if it were to break at some point, I would need to look at the number of times it held me up compared to the number of times it didn't. So we need to do that with God. And number three, God can handle my wrestling. I think as Christ followers, especially, a lot of times we feel like we're not allowed to question. We're not allowed to wrestle. But I just don't believe that. When bad things happen, we wrestle with the age-old question of how a good God can allow evil in this world. We're not the first people to question that. Pastor Tony Evans explains it this way, that's so good. God has given man a choice, and with choice, the potential for evil exists. So freedom allows evil to exist, but it's man that makes evil happen. In other words, man was given a choice, and man gets to choose to do evil or not. And that evil affects us. So for me, that's why I need a sovereign God. God's sovereignty assures me that he's involved in my life and that I can trust he's in control, even when everything else is out of control or seems out of control. And even though he's allowed hard things in my life, he promises to make them work out for my benefit. Who else can promise that? No one. It may take time for me to fully trust God again, but I believe that's okay. God's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and I advocate for all foster and adoptive parents to be trauma trained, because such harm has come. And as you have, you know, so wonderfully put it, it impacts not only the physical, not only the emotional, but it also impacts our relationship with God when trust has been broken. So we need such a holistic approach to help children who've come from hard places, kids with trauma backgrounds. So whether our kids come from an overseas orphanage or from the U.S. foster care system, they have experienced trauma on some level. And I always recommend Dr. Karen Purvis's book, The Connected Child, which teaches trust-based relational intervention, and for parents to get involved with Empower to Connect, which is the trust-based relational intervention sort of packaged for foster and adoptive parents. My husband and I are both certified Empower to Connect parent trainers, because we know, because we've been raising children who have come from hard places, who've experienced trauma, We deal with all of right. that, and we know the importance of being able to parent correctly. And back when you were a child, this kind of training was not available, was not out there. Mm-hmm. Not much was known about the impact of trauma on kids. Mm-hmm. Trauma training wasn't even a requirement back then for foster parents. Do you think that trauma training, Karen, would have made a difference in how your foster parents had responded to you back when you went to that family reunion and you, mm-hmm. you know, your birth mother was there and your foster parents just felt so rejected when you really hadn't rejected them, but their response right. to you, their response to, you know, the behaviors and just mm-hmm. not communicating and that just the way the whole thing kind of blew up in the end. Do you think had they been aware of trauma and the impacts of trauma on you specifically, would that have had a different outcome?
In one word, absolutely.
Yeah.
And not only trauma training, but also a support system where they could ask questions and relay concerns. Because honestly, every behavior makes sense. You may not know what's behind your child's behavior, but in God's economy, it has a history and a reason, and it's most likely a survival behavior. So when parents have a support system, they can find other parents who've experienced the same or similar things and learn from each other. And it's so important for parents to know that they're not alone in raising their traumatized children. So yes, absolutely, I think training is key. And that support system.
And that support system can be found when other foster and adoptive parents can get mm-hmm. together and especially through Empower to Connect. It's mm-hmm. important that we really, you know our
well,
tribe.
Social media, you know, yeah. Facebook, there are specialized groups.
Yes.
And I mean, that can be used as a powerful tool.
Absolutely.
To let you know you're not alone.
Absolutely. So while you didn't get to reconcile with your foster parents before they passed away, you did reunite with their son. Did you get some closure after all of that experience?
I did, Sandra. It took 30 years, but when I went to a class reunion, I had an opportunity to talk with my eldest foster brother, the son that you were talking about. And if you remember, he was the one who accused me of betraying my parents and called me every name in the book the night of the quote-unquote family meeting. And I felt that enough time had passed that I could ask him his take on that night and what had happened and why. I got my sister's take like a long time before that, but I really wanted his take. And so much to my absolute shock at this class reunion, he was not only open to talking, but he apologized for his actions of that night and asked me to forgive him. You could have knocked me over with a feather, and that was so healing. Mm. And then a couple of years ago, when my foster mother passed away, that same brother offered to pick me up from the airport when I flew in for the funeral. And when he picked me up, we had a couple of hours together, and we were able to talk about our parents' reaction that night. And so much of what he said reminded me of certain family dynamics and behaviors. And suddenly, literally, all of the puzzle pieces fit together for me. So understanding their actions really brought full closure for me.
Mm. I'm so glad to hear that you were able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen, as we wrap up here, what is on your heart that you really want our listeners to take away from our conversation today and from last week when you shared your whole story?
Well, first of all, I want to encourage our listeners. God is using you, if you're a parent of a child who is traumatized, if you're a foster parent or adoptive parent, God is using you to bring healing into the lives of these children. And it is a high calling that many, if not most, are simply just unable to do. Take that calling as you would any other by doing the following. First, take the time to get educated in every possible way because your at-risk children deserve it. There's some really good training available nowadays. As you mentioned, Sandra, you're the one who told me about The Connected Child, the book The Connected Child by Dr. Karen Purvis. And I ordered that book upon your recommendation and just devoured it. I mean, she was a behavioral doctor who specialized in understanding and helping children with special emotional and behavioral needs. And, I mean, it's fantastic. But the fact is there's lots of training out there nowadays. And seek after it. Go. Take the time to get trained. The second thing is set up a support system. And I said it earlier, but set up a support system for both you and your child before you take them in. There are going to be victories and failures in this process, but if you know you have a support system in place ahead of time, it'll help minimize misunderstandings when things aren't going as planned or hoped. It's inevitable that your child will need support as well. There are wonderful camps for foster children all over the world. My sister-in-law every summer volunteers her time at a camp just for foster kids, and it's called Royal Family Kids. It's a Christian organization that has camps all over the world for foster kids. And you can look them up at rfk.org. Next, know your insecurities and really work on resolving them. When we don't receive what we don't receive, we can seldom give to others. So, for example, if you're uncomfortable with certain emotions, especially those usually regarded as, quote-unquote, negative, such as sadness or anger, it will be difficult for you to allow your child to express those same emotions. My counselor once told me, emotions are neither good nor bad. They just are. And so not allowing or acknowledging those emotions is actually very detrimental. And lastly, I want to say, God bless you for choosing to love on the helpless, the victimized, the disenfranchised, the unlovely, the hurting, the hopeless, the hard people. Even though my foster parents made a grievous mistake in their parenting, I don't let that overshadow the fact that my life was forever changed for the good by their genuine desire to help me become a better person and live a better life. And I will be forever grateful.
Oh, that is wonderful advice. I love that. Get educated. Advice for foster and adoptive parents. Get educated before children come into your home. And TBRI, Empower to Connect, there are great resources out there today that were not available even 10 years ago. Right. In trauma training for parents. And it is crucial. It is key to success for both the parent and the child. And get support for both the parents and for the child. And I love the fact that you mentioned Royal Family Kids Camp, because I did an interview probably about 6 months ago with the president of Royal Family Kids, and highly recommend that churches get involved and host those kind of camps, but also that kids be able to really spend time and build relationships with kids who have gone through similar experiences as them, so that they know that they're not alone. In the world. And you're absolutely right. Parents need to know their insecurities. They need to own their own stuff, because we cannot bring our kids to any level of healing that we ourselves have not come to.
That's right.
So
that's right.
That is absolutely vital, as you said. So, Karen, you have a blog where our listeners connect with you. Tell us how we can find that.
Yes, they can connect with me. They can read articles. They can get in contact with me if they want to have me on their program or have me come speak, which I absolutely am always honored to do. They can find me at stateoftheheartliving.com. So like state of the art, but stateoftheheartliving.com.
I love that. And do you have any plans to write a book? You have an incredible story.
Thank you. That is still open for, it's an option.
It's an option.
I really have to, I would love to actually co-write with someone. I've never written a book, but I would love to co-write with somebody, at least for my first book.
Yeah. Well, you know, blog posts can turn into chapters of books. So, you know, I'll be looking for it. Let me know when you do that. Karen, thank you again for so candidly sharing your story and what you've learned from it that we can all learn, especially those of us who are foster and adoptive parents, what we can learn from your unique perspective as someone who grew up in foster care and who now lives fully free and healed, walking with God. I just thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to Orphans No More, Sandra. It's always an honor when I'm asked to share my experiences with others.
Well,
really.
It was an honor to have you on today. And for our listeners, Karen's story is not uncommon. Sadly, it's actually the norm for kids growing up in foster care or from overseas orphanages. So I hope that it positively impacts foster and adoptive parents, as we must all learn everything we can about parenting kids from hard places. We need special parenting tools to be able to parent them successfully. So thank you again, Karen. And I thank our listeners for joining us today. This has been Orphans No More. You can find more episodes of this show, and including part one of Karen's story, if you did not catch that previously. They're all on our website at justicefororphansny.org. You can also find them wherever you listen to podcasts, from Google Play to iTunes to Podbean. Be sure to subscribe to the show so you always get the latest episode there. And Justice for Orphans is a nonprofit ministry on a mission to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless. We inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you to. Learn more at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.